Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. It is Monday, April 22nd, and we appreciate you tuning in and being a part of this. I have been doing a lot of conference speaking lately. We're in the conference season, and so many of you who have attended these conferences and our regular listeners come up and say, Dave, so good to be able to hear, be a part of the broadcast. Thank you so much for doing this. It really means a lot because we do a lot of this by faith out there, which means we don't know if anyone's listening. We see people dialing into the switchboard, and we see some of the statistics, and we're not even sure the statistics that we get are all accurate. But it's really when you walk up at these conferences and saying, Dave, we hear you each and every week. We're part of it. Like one guy, and I thought I better wait to give him a shout-out here, but I'll mention his company name maybe next week. But he says, Dave, I use your program. I shamelessly plagiarize it. I go in, listen to your broadcast, then I bring my staff together, and I use your notes, and I sound so intelligent because I try to repeat everything Alice just said, and what Joe said, and what you say, and your guests say. So it's really a good compliment. But he says, I shamelessly plagiarize the broadcast. So the highest form of flattery is plagiarism, so we are, though, happy. But many of you, we heard also from other companies that say, we make this a part of our broadcast, I mean, of our morning, Monday morning meeting. So for those of you that have this over the PA system and we're talking to a staff, welcome to the broadcast. Good to be here with you. United Guaranty, I want to say a special thank you to them as our sponsor. Alamo's going to come back and be a sponsor. Excited about them coming back. But United Guaranty, they're just here each and every month, each and every week, each and every day. So good to go out and meet the United Guaranty representatives as I'm attending these conferences. First class group of MI professionals. Encourage you to get a hold of your MI, your United Guaranty MI rep, and set up a meeting. Talk to them about the programs that they have going on, and we'll be talking more specifically about some of the things they're wanting us to focus you on as we go to it. Go over to their website. You can go to it by going to lickitonlending.com, www.lickitonlending.com. You can click on the upper right-hand corner of their ad, the United Guaranty ad, and it'll take you right up to the website. Go check out their products. Very exciting. And we're thrilled to have them be a part of the broadcast each and every week. I talked about the fact that we're in conference season and so many of these conferences. And we have Marianne Collins, who's the executive director of the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Association, on the line. And we have an upcoming conference, Marianne, that I get to speak at your great event. And I'm so excited about it. Good to have you here.
Thank you, David. We're so excited to have you. We know how busy you are, and you always draw a great crowd. This conference is really exciting. Besides having you, David, we're also going to have Bob Haggerty. Many of you who read the Wall Street Journal would know him as James R. Haggerty. Yeah. He wrote a book on Fannie Mae. Also is award-winning journalist for his coverage of the subprime crisis. Yes. Also have Barry Habib. Barry will be doing a three-hour sales session, so I think that is very exciting. Pat Sherlock, who is a been on your program, excellent, yes, excellent gal. And you mentioned Alamode. Patrick Scott from Alamode will also be a speaker. And Deborah Still, chairman of the MBA, will be there bringing us up to date. And so it's just so exciting. May 13th to 15th, and because of your radio program today, we're going to extend the early bird registration through the end of the month. So we really appreciate you having us, David. Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you on. Again, those dates are, it's in Columbus, Ohio, at the Hyatt Regency there. And the dates again, Marianne?
May 13th to 15th. If anyone wants information, they can call me at 614-682-6555. Or you can go to our website. It's under construction right now, so it's not real current, but the registration form is on there, and that is omba@ohiomba.org.
Mary Ann, thanks for taking a little time out to join us, tell our listeners about it, and thanks for extending out that early bird registration price. That's really appreciated. Thank you so much, Mary Ann. Looking forward to being with you next month there in beautiful Columbus.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I see that we also are fortunate. We got the normal run-up or regular broadcast schedule we're going to stick with here in just a minute. But Paul Mallow, who's one hard guy to get on the radio, he just logged in. So we're going to get a quick update on the news and some of the things going on from Inside Mortgage Finance. Paul, good to have you here. What do you see in the headlines for our listeners?
Well, a couple things going on this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are. Redwood Trust has come to market with yet another jumbo MBS offering. This just came out this morning. They're coming to market with about a $425 million offering. It's interesting because it's, well, once again, AAA rated. It's got apparently 61 or 60 or so different lenders are feeding this security. So that's of interest. We got some new numbers we crunched, or we got crunched for us, I should say, from Stern AG, and they've actually ranked some of the top servicers in the nation. They looked at their servicing and how much it counts might count as Tier 1 capital under Basel, and lo and behold, Wells Fargo is a little over that 10% cap, but it may not mean anything since the Basel Accords are sort of up in the air. No one knows what's going on. They were set to go into effect sometime late last year, early this year, and the whole thing's been put on hold. Navy Federal just reported first quarter originations. They really cranked it out once again. They did $3.2 billion in the first quarter. That's almost double what they did a year ago. Yeah, but what's interesting about Navy, it's sort of fascinating. They keep producing this loan called a Home Buyer's Choice. And what it is, it's 100% LTV, no money down, no mortgage insurance. And it's making that loan to its members. Navy Federal, of course, is a credit union. And a lot of their members are, you know, members of the military or federal government. They won't give too much information on how much that loan they're producing. But in a press statement they put out today, they said 53% of their purchase business, not their total business, is tied to first-time home buyers. So we sort of feel that that is probably the home buyer choice loan where no money down is required. So, you know, that's a very interesting product because people keep talking about perhaps that loan standards are loosening somewhat, and that's a pretty good example of it right there.
Yeah, so very much so.
Then on late last week, we at Inside Mortgage Finance, we had a webinar on how to get approved by Fannie and Freddie. A couple of interesting numbers were thrown out there that if you're looking to get your seller servicer approvals, might cost you upwards of $10,000 to $20,000. So there's a story today on our website, which is www.imfnews.com. One more time, www.imfnews.com, about getting your Fannie Freddie approvals and how much it's going to cost. It was a really good webinar last week. We had great attendance, and a lot of good stuff came out of it. So that's sort of the long and short of it. Also, FHA delinquencies were down. So that was more good news that we reported this morning.
Well, that is good. Anytime we see those numbers going down, it's excellent good news. And I'm on the website right now. I encourage everyone to go out there and grab it, imfnews.com. It's a free service that you can get by just going and signing up online. So head over there and grab it. Paul, appreciate you taking time out of your very busy day.
Great
Guy Sakala and the whole team there. You guys do such an outstanding job of, you know, digesting all that's going on in the marketplace. Great place to get information one-stop. Quick read on every each day. What's the headlines? Appreciate you dialing in, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ken. Take care.
All right. Good. You bet. Joe Farr, let's talk about what's going on in the interest rate world right now. I know last week was one of those things where we sit and look at some of the things happening, but let's talk about, you know, prices up a little bit, 230 seconds today. Is that still the whole?
Well, that's old. That's old news.
Old news.
Old news. So I put this thing together 10 minutes ago. Now, we've had a little volatility this morning, unlike last week, which was very quiet. But this morning we're down to where we ended the day Friday, but we had been as high as 5 or 6 30-seconds better than this. So we have put out early in the morning, we saw a move higher following the weaker than expected existing home sales. And in fact, we put out a favorable price change, and we saw a few investors make favorable price changes. But right now, it's kind of reversed that, because all that gain's been given back, and in fact, we're a couple 30 seconds below where you know, the earliest of investors might have priced. So be aware, if you got favorable price changes, you might get unfavorable price changes. But you know, the existing home sales fell a little bit short, and it's kind of been the trend here lately. The housing news has pretty much disappointed, with the exception last week of the housing starts number. Everything's fallen a little bit short of where people thought it would be. So don't know if expectations rose too much or it's just a cyclical, and we should be getting into the very good part of the housing data, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should be.
So, interesting thing. Finally, we got a little stability, I think, or at least the prospects for stability in the government in Italy grew over the weekend. They were able to elect an individual, a former president, that it has the backing of two of the major parties, and we think that's going to allow him to be able to form a government. And so just one of those uncertainties that was out there was what would happen in Italy, and it's been running essentially without a government for a while. So nice to see that should get under control just a bit. But last week, Dave, you know, I mentioned it was pretty quiet. It was very quiet for mortgage rates in a week that was very loud at everything else. Stocks were volatile. Gold prices fell. Copper prices fell. I mean, it was a crazy week for just about everything but mortgages. So I guess it's kind of nice to be the in the quiet part of that storm. China announced their first quarter GDP was a good bit lower than what people were expecting, and that's what kind of kicked off the issues with the commodities, and then that spilled over into the stock prices. And so, but China being weak in GDP is kind of a good thing for mortgages, because that sure reduces inflationary pressure. There was very little that came out in the U.S. That was a surprise from an economic perspective. I mentioned the housing starts were a little better than expected, along with industrial production, but both the Empire State Index and the Philly Fed Index were short of expectations. CPI came out at an annual rate of 1.9%. 1.9% is a very reasonable rate, well within the Fed's concern level.
Yep.
And, you know, as we've been telling people, inflation's always important in determining what more interest rates, long-term fixed rate interest rates should be, even more so now because of how the Fed's going to react when inflation begins to rise. And so very good to see things like a very low real number, core CPI. And then when you see the consequence of a slowing Japan and falling commodity prices, those are both good for inflation as well. So it certainly didn't hurt mortgage rates that China had that slowdown.
Right.
For this week, the biggest thing is going to be GDP on Friday. You know, the first quarter GDP. People are expecting about 2.8% annual rate. Some people maybe even a little higher. New home sales comes out tomorrow. Durable orders comes out on Wednesday. And then Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the 2 and the 5 and the 7. So
any sense on, you know, what the – let's they also publish – I was going to say, what is the sense of direction of the numbers we're going to see this week? I know they publish expectations and, you know, give us a little insights of what you're seeing based on those projected numbers to be, anticipated numbers.
Well, new home sales are projected to be just about where they were, 415,000 units as compared to 411 last time. Durable orders is expected to fall. That's a very volatile measure, and that could be solely related to, you know, big ticket items, you know, airlines or something like that. Jobless claims, look for those to be about the same, and then consumer sentiment is the only other thing that's due out next week, and the expectations are that consumer sentiment will stay just about where it was in you know, the prior measure.
Previous Treasury auctions have been reasonably on target with expectations,
you know,
in the past.
They've been weak. They've been weak. And surprisingly, the weak Treasury auctions have not spilled over into the mortgage market. So a little disconnect there. And you know, maybe not terribly weak, but, you know, they haven't been getting the good grades.
That is interesting, but if you want to know what's going on, volatility lies ahead. We know one thing we can know, volatility lies ahead, Joe. And it's such an advantage for those of our clients and people that I speak at these conferences. Oh, yeah, I use MBS Quote Line. I said, what do you like most about it? And they keep saying, Dave, it's what you say on the radio. It's just so concise, to the point. And it's and I just get it right to my cell phone, and it's, you know, I don't have to read a lot of stuff. It's just right to the point. So, folks, if you want to learn how to sign up and start becoming a user of MBS Quote Line, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quote Line can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quote Line monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quote Line, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quote Line can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Hey, did I mention that we've got Les Parker coming up a little bit later in the broadcast? I'm really looking forward. We're doing a series of broadcasts on servicing, and Les is going to be giving his perspective. And, man, he has got a lot of experience in all aspects of servicing, and I'm looking forward to having him on, and we continue our discussion on servicing. But back with us after an extended absence. Seems like it's, you know, Alice, you've gone one show, it just seems like it's forever. But two shows, come on, we have been missing you, girl. So good to have you live on here, and it's just not the same without you, Alice.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Dave. It's good to be back. And anyway, lots to talk about too. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, maybe we get a chance on one of the shows to kind of catch up with things that have been going on, because I certainly want to have a show in the future where we can just help people plan a little bit with all of the proposed regulations that are out there. Well, one of the big ones hanging over our head has been how to interpret the qualified mortgage rule. So, and the whole concept of, well, if I have an approved eligible, that's great. My approved eligible means I have a qualified mortgage. Well, there are a lot of what-ifs that go with that, right? There are companies that might run it through automated underwriting, but that never really sell it to Fannie or Freddie. Or what if I sell it to Fannie or Freddie and then I have a repurchase 3 years from now? What do I lose my QM status at that point? So I consider this a very critical proposed rule. It's a little over 90 pages. Hey, that's short by today's standards, folks.
90?
Yeah, that's short. We're used to getting like 800 or 1,200 pages.
90 is usually the introduction.
Right. So what I want you to do, though, is you've got to have a meeting about this proposed rule. This is huge. There's definitely the section that talks about small creditor status and defining that. And those of you who that may apply to, you will focus some attention on that, certainly. But for everybody listening, it is all about how do I use the underwriting standards that are in Appendix Q of the QM rule. Appendix Q was essentially a copy and paste from FHA's guide. Well, on the surface, that sounds like, okay, that's fine. I do FHAs. I can live with that. But the reality is, we're taking FHA's guide, which you can defend in a QC audit. You can work with FHA in negotiations if they don't agree with something. It's a much more fluid process when it's sitting in the guide. And CFPB is pointing out to everybody, hey, if we put this in the rule, it's law. So we've got to get rid of some of the ambiguous terms and some of the things that don't make sense that, you know, lawyers could use to sue over frivolous statements. So this proposed rule drills down into all the income calculation requirements and tries to clear up some of that wording so that we're not faced with trying to say, you know, if you're trying to use a word like, for example, the 4155 says you have to prove that the borrower is going to be on their job for 3 years. Well, we can't prove that. So CFPB, that's a good example of one. They're going to take out that wording from this. So everybody needs to sit down and look at Appendix Q from QM in a whole different light. Look at it as, how do I make these bright line items and not items that I know might vary from one file to the next? Because you know the two most famous words that every underwriter says on every file. That depends, right?
Absolutely.
That depends, right? And so you don't get to use that depends when you're working with this regulation. So take a look at it. They have touched on each one of the income sections. So how should they change the verbiage related to regular income? Like, for example, overtime and bonus, verifying it will likely to continue. They're talking about taking that out. That's a good thing. They talk about Social Security income. They talk about self-employed borrower income. Here's my concern, folks. Nothing in here about the actual calculation itself.
Wow.
So please, spend time on the section and call to CFPB's attention even the things with how to calculate a DTI that I think are a challenge. You know, do I have to count everything that's less than 10 months? You know, how do I go about this calculation? So this is a big response item. It was just published last Friday, so you have 60 days. Have your meeting next week. Start putting together your thoughts. This is a big one. We'll talk about it some more on some of the other shows. The other thing, too, about this was in the repurchase world, that repurchase demands seem to be, at least from the way this is worded, case by case. You know, if you had a repurchase demand that was related to an appraisal, that's obviously not the ability to repay. What I would recommend, folks, is give a lot of examples for CFPB to give us a lot of examples of what is and is not a repurchase problem. Because they're trying to kind of walk that line of, well, you know, if you didn't document income well and you totally blew it on the debt calculation, then we might cite that a repurchase is relevant to losing your QM status. So, again, go back, take a look at this, give some specific examples of what you see could be a problem on that loan-level basis. That this is the time that's critical in this law to be at the loan-level basis. So that's my main thing I want to make sure everybody is
everybody
paying attention to over the next 60
yep.
days, Dave. Yep, lots there's going on with that proposed rule.
Oh,
hey,
so
Alan.
Much.
Yeah.
It
sounds as though what you're describing, CFPB, is kind of taking the vague approach on what they have to do, but they're saying very specifically what you have to do in order to have a qualified loan. Are we getting into that area where we wanted guidance, but now, I mean, the guidance in a very general way as opposed to the guidance in a very specific way, and we're getting the very specific way?
Well, I'm reading it more of it's too gray, and we've got to take out a lot of that gray and make it so it is broader in the sense, and so, for example, in the sense of I just need to know they have overtime and bonus as of today. Under QM, I wouldn't have to prove a two-year history or prove it's going to continue. So they're actually bringing up points that are in our favor that we need to think about to bring so that it's, I wouldn't say putting us, it's not putting us in a box, it's trying to give us a bigger box. Does that make sense?
Define
it. Yeah, so just define a simple requirement as opposed to describing the full underwriting philosophy behind what is stable over time.
Man.
As an example, yeah.
Everyone is pulling their hair out. Marianne's got this conference coming up in Ohio, and, I mean, everyone's going, how can we stay in touch with us? The last two conferences I spoke at, everyone's saying, Alice, how can we stay in touch with this? You're bringing this out each and every week, and me alerting people to what's going on is such a valuable contribution to the industry. And we appreciate you, Alice, coming on
Thank
and being
you.
A part of this each and every week.
I have
week.
Been speaking on it as well. Yeah, I have been speaking on this as well if they want me to come out and we can kind of talk through the details. Because some lenders, you know, when they talk about, I think the headline on the Secondary Market Executive magazine was the butterfly effect, you know, of QM,
yeah.
this ripple. And I thought that was a great analogy because there are some companies who've already said, I'm just not going to originate anything over a 43 DTI. And I think that's crazy. I don't think you have to go that far. But
yeah.
there is a lot to learn and understand about it.
Well, one of your clients walked up to me when I spoke last week at the Tri-State Conference and said, oh, I love Alice and your radio program. But you know what's even better is when you have her in training you, she is so motivating. I mean, it can be overwhelming. So many people can just fight depression. She makes it as about as upbeat and positive as possible. So you have one of your clients bragging on you at the conference last week. So
thank you.
Good stuff. Appreciate it, Alice, bringing it to us each and every week. We've got Tony McGarrettano coming up here in the next right after the ad, and then Les Parker will be coming on and talking to us. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Normally we'd have the Profit Doctor in here, but he's out making house calls. He's actually heading up to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I tell you, it's with all that's going on in the financial world and the financial reporting and how complicated things are, well, it's not so much it's new or being really overcomplicated. It's just the fact that you've got to get it right, especially with these call reports. More and more people are calling to Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, and saying, come on in. Let's double check and cross our T's and dot our I's. Make sure we're doing it right. So he is out doing that. One busy guy these days, so our thoughts go out to him, and we pray that he has safe travel as he's traveling around the country this week. Also, I'd call your attention to the MBA Campus MBA webinar that he's doing, and it's really good, and a lot of people are saying, man, that's another thing I hear about when I'm traveling around. These this webinar on accounting is essential. And a lot of people say, I thought I knew that. I thought I knew it. And then he brings it up and finding out, he raises the questions that we need asked. Well, we said it's conference season, and last week, last Sunday, I flew to Hollywood, actually Fort Lauderdale, and drove taxied down to Hollywood, Florida. And I joined up with another regular on our broadcast, Tony Garrettano, who's on the call with us here today. Tony, good to have you on the radio.
Thank you for having me, Dave. It was great to see you in Hollywood last week.
Well, not only that, you honored me with the 2012 Innovation Award, and all I did is just start this thing. And really, the congratulations go out to Joe and Alice and yourself and many others that make this just the success that it is. But I want to say thank you so much, Tony, for honoring us and our efforts. We go to all this work doing this each and every week. It really is a blessing when someone goes, yeah, Dave, that's actually pretty good. So appreciate it. Thank you.
You know, I think the innovations competition and the awards ceremony itself is really a highlight for progress. And we think that if we can get more people innovating, we need to spotlight existing innovators, because if they see the great things that you're doing, Dave, I think that that's going to make them do great things in the future. So you are certainly deserving. The radio show is wonderful. I'm glad to be a part of it. And it's fulfilling a real industry service and a real industry need.
Well, the competition to get this award, I was just astounded at the steps and all the aspects of it. But let's get in talking because, you know, like the narcissist says, enough about me, so let's think what you think about me. So I don't want to get off of us, but I do want to say thank you for the award. It is much, much appreciated to be recognized for what we're doing. We're giving this out as a free service to the industry. It's nice to be recognized. Really, those thank yous and the attaboys, and keep at it. Kind of really say thank you. Let's talk about what is going on in the world of loan origination systems. We talk a lot about how fierce the current loan origination system wars are out there for market share. Is it really fair to say that there are the wars going on? Are we going to see continued consolidation and market share warfare?
Well, I mean, we always hear that anecdotally from lenders and vendors, but what shocked me was there was a new survey put out by Questsoft where they surveyed their lenders, and 1 in 5 lenders surveyed said that they are reevaluating their loan origination system this year.
Wow, 1 in 5.
1 in 5, I mean, it was 18.6% to be exact, and that was pretty stable as compared to the survey last year. What they noticed is that they've actually been surveying LOS change since 2007, and it's been pretty constant, around 10%. But in 2011, it jumped up to 17.75%. It's gone higher in 2012, and it's about the same in 2013 that it was in 2012. I mean, 18.6% of lenders reevaluating their LOS this year. That's fierce competition.
That is fierce competition. How do you see the LOS market sharing or shaping up, and the market share shaping up over the next few years, Tony? I mean, you've watched this cycle numerous times, so you're probably about as good to project what you think will happen as anybody.
Well, we're not seeing many new lenders enter the space, Dave. So what we're going to be seeing is LOS systems really competing head-to-head with each other to displace each other. So I think that that's going to make for a very tense environment. And also of note this year is some of the bigger companies that have been pretty absent, namely, you know, the Fiservs, the FISs, mm-hmm. and the LPSs are going to be coming back into the market this year with new loan origination system offerings.
Wow.
In particular, you know, Fiserv's common origination platform, I would imagine, is going to be something that's going to hit the market this year, and that could be pretty interesting in terms of how the other LOSs compete. I also saw a demo at the trade show that we were at, Dave, of a new LOS from Calyx Point called Path. And I think that, you know, given Calyx's continuing market share, you know, the fact that they're coming to market with a new, more updated LOS may be a significant news event this year as well. Mortgage Builder continues to do opportunistic acquisitions. They're growing at a feverish pace, and they now have a servicing system. So, you know, there are some really big key players that are making moves that I think are going to push some of those smaller players out of the market this year. But, I mean, either way, it's certainly going to be very fierce.
The jury is still out, so it's there's no clear winners at this point, and especially with some of the old names coming back into the market, Calyx Point and Fiserv and some of these. I mean, it's going to mix it up, keep it very interesting, Tony. So we got to have you on each and every week just helping us sort it all out. Give us a blow-by-blow. Okay, coming to you live from this quarter of the section, we've watched a knockout punch by so-and-so. Yeah, well, you give us that. Tony, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day. Again, to learn more about Progress in Lending, go to the website, www.progressinlending.com. Great amount of information there. And if you want to get a hold of Tony, you can email him at tony@progressinlending.com or call him at 203-529-3131. Best number to reach him at. Tony, again, thank you, and I appreciate the award. We appreciate you being here with us each and every week.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us. We have a special guest today. I'm excited about this discussion with Les, someone who has been on the broadcast numerous times, and we always love to have Les Parker back. And Les is dialing in. It is live. Make sure, golly, I love it when I make sure I don't turn on the mic. There we go. We should be having his mic live. Les, are you there?
I am here, Dave.
Oh, I'm here. Oh, that has such a good big brother voice to it. So anyway,
Dave,
you are like a big brother to me. I mean, we've been such good friends for so many years. Les, appreciate you joining in on the broadcast today. And we're talking about servicing, so we're going to continue our discussion. And, man, there's a lot to talk about here. So without further ado, let's get into it. First of all, give us your overall perspective on the market. Is, in fact, servicing a strategy that someone should be considering?
Absolutely. We have seen servicing values come more into being truly fair market driven. For a number of years, they were not. I think the aggregates kept bidding up a price that really didn't make sense. It caused small and mid-sized mortgage companies across the nation to not retain servicing. And now, because those values are more in the proper line economically, and because of other regulatory changes and capital changes, the banks that were putting prices on that didn't seem to make a lot of sense, at least to a mid-size or smaller company, now make sense. And so, yes, mortgage companies should be seriously considering servicing. There are some significant obstacles, but they should be in the game if they can.
Without question. So, I mean, I remember last quarter in 2012, you were tweeting out that shrinking market margins would be the number one risk for mortgage bankers in 2013. So let's get an update on that. Now it seems that seems to be the talk of the town. So give us your perspective on the margins overall for our, just generally.
Well, Dave, I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but but margins are definitely shrinking. They actually began shrinking in late 2012, and it was really fairly easy to predict that this was going to happen. Here we were at record margins, and then we had trends in production and capacity that said competition would be increasing. Anytime you have an increase in competition, you're going to have people want to bid prices lower.
No question. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah. I was going to add, Les. There are a number of factors, weren't there, last year that kind of contributed to what we saw as very big best margins ever, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The real estate meltdown caused capacity in our industry to collapse. I remember dialoguing with some of our top economists in our industry, and to think that the industry would have to shrink 50% was pretty much a given. So we had a dramatic drop in capacity. Essentially, we had $2 trillion in production. Now we have $1 trillion in production, so just do the math. Then we came into kind of a stable, low-rate environment, and that actually started allowing entrance into the market. And there was this belief that Europe was going to be okay, and when that happened, rates started coming up a little bit. And then we kind of had a good stabilization of capacity. And I think basically the industry's set for 1.2, you know, it's someplace a little over 1 trillion in capacity right now.
Yeah.
And then we had 2011 where Europe turned out to not be good and growth started slowing and rates fell. And when that rates fell, then there became the drumbeat, right? You probably remember this, of everyone saying, oh, the Fed's got to rescue us. We need QE3. You remember all that talk? And so we ended up with these fresh lows, and then the Fed comes in and says, oh, by the way, we're going to own 30 to 50% of the TBA market. And when that happened, we ended up with a stable, lower rate environment. Capacity expanded as people thought, oh, great, this is going to last forever. We had Wells and adjust how they were buying TPOs. We had B of A exiting, which some of that happened in 2010 and 11, but the TPO market was going through great upheaval. So we ended up with new entrants into the market. And so before, but as that's happening, we were able to all make a lot of money. But as the new entrants came in, that's when margins started really, really getting slammed. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah. Well, and the G-fee things didn't help either, did it?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, not at all. It really increased the cost to refinance. And it seems, in a sense, small, but it's so big. When you do the huge increases we had in the G fees of 20 basis points and people are thinking, that's small? No, excuse me, mm-hmm. That's a big obstacle. So now it's more expensive to refinance.
Hi, Les. This is Alice. I wanted to jump in here with a question on this. You know, the refi environment right now is impacting how lenders view the value of servicing. Can you talk a little bit about the servicing runoff risks?
You know, Alice, good question. It's amazing. You're even good at these things, too. You're not just the quality person, are you?
No, I oversaw servicing at one point in my life, too. Yes.
Well, the number one tool that mortgage, particularly non-financial mortgage originators, the number one tool they use to defend their balance sheet is to refinance any and all inquiries into their servicing. So if they can refinance that loan quickly, get it back onto their books, they sustain that value. And that's really the major tool that they're doing.
So,
if you're going to do that, though, you have to do it at low overhead, don't you, Alice?
Right, right. So how do lenders manage their margins?
Well, they try to do it by making sure on the refinances they can do that at a very low cost. They also are using tools like what you dialogued just last week on your program on how can you know when you need to have people on alert for they're having problems and now they have to be handled in a different way. And Frank talked about that in last week's program. But you also need to know where opportunities are, too. You may have consumers that are seeing some positive growth in their equity, and you may want to be targeting them for a different type of approach. So there's revenue opportunities as well as trying to cut overhead, try to maintain your cost.
Yeah, that's knowing a lot about your customer, right, and really, really looking at all the opportunities within it. And now, are you talking about this at the MBA secondary? Is that what I understand?
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I guess, if you want to sit down with accountants calling that fun. But
hey, we
I'm,
love that stuff on this show.
I'm joining PricewaterhouseCoopers and City Mortgage on a panel at the MBA Secondary Marketing Conference. And we're going to talk about that very subject on how to maintain margins, how can you manage your margins better.
Oops.
And we're actually going to have that on Tuesday, May 7th at 10:30, from 10:30 to noon in New York City at
awesome.
The Marriott Marquis.
Hey, Les, this is Joe.
Yep.
Yeah, you mentioned the loans being refinanced and the you know, protecting the portfolio. What how successful are the aggregators at keeping the loans that they buy? And if they're not, it's got to be killing their margins that they're paying, even though they're paying very little, they're paying something for something that's gone away very quickly.
Good question. Let's look at the policies of some of these majors. If you look at BB&T and you look at Wells, both of them say that if you're going to refinance our loans, which you can after the four-month exclusion from the first payment, then you can do it as a lender that may have sold them the loan, but it has to come back to just them. It can only be for their portfolio. So there are operational ways that they're trying to, and contractual ways that they're trying to manage that risk.
And do they not pay the second time through
SRP? No, they pay, but they feel like if at least it comes the same direction, then there are some other adjustments. There's contractual ways that they're trying to manage it.
Okay.
But they want the origination. They look at it as, okay, if it's going to go off the books, I want it to at least come back to me.
Well, is there any increased value assigned to it? If it leaves at 4.5 and comes back at 3.5, you'd think it would be a more valuable asset.
Yes, I think you can say that. You know, it makes me think of the oldest economic joke in the world. A businessman is interviewing a mathematician, an accountant, and an economist for a job, and actually financial analyst job. And he asks them, says, what is 2 + 2? Well, the mathematician says, exactly 4. The accountant responds, depending on what interest, depreciation, and taxes are, it's approximately 2. And the economist, he gets his voice a little bit lower, shuts the door, and leans forward and says, and closes the blinds too. Doesn't want anybody reading his lips like Hal in 2001 Space Odyssey. And he says, well, what do you want it to be? So if you think about servicing, that's exactly where we're at. If rates go lower, they'll jack up the value some. And there is a rationalization. You can drive down your discount rate some. You can look at the duration of that asset being on the books, probably being longer. But that was the very game that caused aggregators to keep driving up values higher and higher and higher as rates were going lower and lower, and it just finally came to a point that they couldn't do it anymore. And that was one of the things that had major adjustments. But now at these levels, they're almost going the opposite way. Every time there's a little bit of dip in rates, they say, oh, we want to add more servicing into our books because we think rates are going to go back up, and they're going to go back up soon because inflation's just around the corner.
And you're not buying that?
No.
No.
No, not at all. I guess the gold market and silver market and copper market, as Joe was talking about earlier, they're not buying it either.
They're not buying. Yeah, exactly. Joe, you're talking about the gold prices. I mean, that seems to be a clear indication that there is no worries about any of this dramatically changing. You were talking about that, Joe, but Les, how would you characterize the gold price? I mean, do you read that as just things are returning back to some sanity, or was gold and the precious metals just oversold in anticipation of things just getting worse and worse and worse?
I don't feel comfortable commenting on the current gold environment. I'm not too worried about it.
You're not too worried about it. That's all I want to hear. Not too worried
about it. Earlier we were talking about margins, and the real simple message that I have and I'm going to carry to New York with me is you have to price loans right, you have to sell them right, and you have to monitor them right.
Okay, so let's talk about that. When you say sell right, what do you specifically mean?
If you're going to sell loans right, that means you have to sell a validated quality loan. That's what builds investor confidence. Investors want greater reliability, accountability, and transparency throughout the life cycle of a mortgage.
Interesting. All right. Good, simple definition. We seem to keep hearing about compliance issues, regulatory issues, demands on the loan quality. So how does it regulate or relate to margins when you start looking? I mean, Alice talks about all these changes. Do you see it impacting the margins?
Well, Alice can probably attest to this, that everyone views anyone dealing with QC as a drag, as a pure cost center. But in fact, it actually can be a revenue center. When you start producing quality loans, when you're going through the QC process, if you make the process changes, you become a more efficient organization. You'll be producing better quality loans, and you're preparing yourself for the future. That's where the FIFA, where the GSEs want us to go, is to quality lending so they can these new loans that come into the loans come in, they want in the new securitization model a certification that these are quality loans, that every single field has been validated. That's the future. And mortgage bankers need to run to that future because there is going to end up being more and more compensation for it. You see it some in the jumbo market and in the non-GSE market already, that they can't even issue a security unless there's confidence in all the way down to the field level, there's confidence that data is correct so you can do proper analysis.
When you talk about proper analysis, let's turn our attention to monitoring for a moment and really get into your perspective of how do these people monitor all that's going on right now?
You know, it is interesting. If you look
other than listen
at,
to Alice. <the radio. laughs>
When you look at where for companies to properly monitor their portfolios, it's requiring more and more time by financial analysts because there's more data. Data actually adds noise. So you have to be able to understand your data to be able to make good decisions. So Let me give you an idea here about how much it's costing. There was a recent CFO Journal, it's put out by the Wall Street Journal, had a brief line headline story that said finance budgets staffs may shrink this year. And when they're doing the corporate finance executives on average expect the operating budgets for their finance teams to drop this year, as they shed staff and focus on margins. That's what's happening in the corporate finance world. And the executives surveyed see average revenue growth of 6.5%, but a 1.2% drop in finance budgets. Now, if you're dropping your headcount and you're dropping your finance budget, and yet you're increasing revenue, then there's only one thing that has to happen. You have to increase productivity. That's where it's all at. You know,
it's interesting because they keep talking, because at the same time, I go into so many shops that haven't staffed properly for compliance in the first place. So I hope the shops that think they're cutting back are not looking at the compliance departments.
Yeah, and Alice, on the compliance department, if in this new world that we're headed towards, if you don't change the systems, it's going to require 10 times the number of people currently in QA and QC departments. And guess what? Companies right now are not even willing to consider that.
Yeah.
I would like this to kind of, getting back to the monitoring side, it takes lenders doing the right thing all the time to restore confidence and to keep their loans sold. In fact, keep their sold loans sold, you might say. So I'd like you to consider the demands on lenders along the loan life cycle, or I also like to refer to it as the loan continuum. Brian Fitzpatrick, the CEO of Aclaro, and he's also strategic marketing partner, or Aclaro's a strategic marketing partner with Nilex, I think he can give us some insight for your listeners on how to address the lender's ever-changing risk profile.
Yeah, let's run with that. Here's a pre-recorded message. Stay tuned. Listen to this. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Les. On the subject of lending risk, what we hear from lenders across the country is that they don't really know where their risks lie. This is a scary situation when credit risk, collateral risk, or other risk factors are just left unchecked and not proactively managed. Further complicating matters, there's a lack of staff to consolidate all the necessary data, manipulate spreadsheets, and perform any type of analysis. This issue is the very reason that NYLEX developed its LoanHD platform, and our clients say things like, well, now I have real-time access to vast information that just wasn't available before, and I no longer need to try to manipulate core systems and wait for days to see the data I need to build trends and analyze risk. Lenders really owe it to themselves to check out this technology and stop operating in the dark. As the name implies, LoanHD really does show loan portfolio data in high definition. Les?
Well, thanks, Brian. I appreciate that very much.
Well, and we're looking at that. I mean, so can people find more by searching on LoanHD? And then I'd love your thoughts. Give us some more insights into this. That was a good soundbite.
Yeah.
But I'd love to get a little more from your perspective, Les.
Sure. LoanHD, you can actually find it. Just type LoanHD in any web browser or a search engine, and it will pop up. But if you want to go directly to the URL, www.nylx.com. So NYLEX.com. And, you know, it's interesting, Dave. Howard Konyak is the founder of NYLEX, CEO of NYLEX, and I like what he says about the paradigm shift in mortgage banking and consumer lending. We all used to say time is money. Well, what Howard says is now data is money.
Data is money. Interesting.
Data is money. That's right. The thing is, you kind of go, well, what's he referring to? To me, it is we get to try and move away from all the noise or even being buried in the forest and only seeing a tree. How do you take all the data now that's available and be able to see it in picture form? And how then, if you can see it in pictures, if we do it in ways that we can slice and dice information, see it in pictures, we can end up finding the fragile areas. And when you find the fragile areas, now analysts can get focused. To me, LoanHD or where the future needs to be is we need to move away from trying to do spreadsheet upon spreadsheet upon spreadsheet and try to move into a different way of understanding data. And the way I see it is that we're going to move towards Google satellite. We're going to essentially be able to see our portfolios like Google satellite looks down and sees trees and forests and valleys and rivers and streams and mountains.
So you're talking about more of a perspective of being able to look down into whatever you're holding. Like, you know, I think that's a great metaphor, is the Google satellite and the weather tracking. We have so many interesting systems today that we never even fathomed to have access to. So you're saying the same principle. Oh, man, I'm looking at the clock. We've got to hurry along here. But it's the same principle. We're looking at your portfolio, same topical view down and then into the details of it. Am I correct?
Absolutely. It used to be, Dave, there were shortcuts. If you study mathematics, there was a great shortcut many years ago we found and called calculus. Well, it's only because we didn't have the computing power to just take out polynomials and algebraic equations all the way out. Well, we now can do that. We have the computing power. So now we can actually look at all the facts, all of them, and we can create these pictures of facts. You know, think about some art that you've seen before, where if you're really up close, all you see is individual dots. But
right.
If you get further and further away, what do you end up seeing? You see this whole mosaic of a picture that's absolutely beautiful. You can do that now with the technology that's available. You can convert data that's just all of this information you can take all those facts and now convert them into pictures and into scattergrams, essentially, and find where the fragile areas are and really focus your analytics.
Fascinating information. Our special guest today has been Les Parker of Parker & Company. Les, how can they get a hold of you if they want to learn more? We just scratched the surface of this one broadcast today. Quickly, how can they reach you?
They can reach me at 800-A1-HEDGE, but they can also reach Aclero at aklero.com or Nylex, NYLX.com.
Thank you so much, Les. We're out of time, and we're going to have David Stevens and Austin Tillman next week talking more about the topic of servicing. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week and telling others about it. Have a great week, everybody. Tune in next week. Look forward to being with you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.